Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
All right. I've got something I would like to know about, since we've been kind of making fun of you, Souther, for the last few weeks about your haunted house bar.
For the last few weeks? My corn maze? That's what I heard.
Yeah, corn maze. But it 'tis the season, right? So, like, did you have friends and family, I heard?
We did. We had friends and family last week. It was great to get people in the room. So it's called Café de l'Enfer, which means cafe from hell. And we 100% ripped this idea off. This bar existed in 1820s France, in Paris, in the Montmartre, and it was called Cabaret de l'Enfer. And it was an absinthe and champagne bar that was decorated with like lots of sort of crushed velvet and melted candle wax. Very goth, Victorian at the time, but goth today, right? So yeah, we hijacked this idea and have made this space that's pretty cool. Greg got to come to friends and family. What did you think of the space, Greg?
It was nifty, man. I mean, I really was struck by how the sort of like Wild West cowboy aesthetic of Honeybees, because it's in the old Honeybee space, works. It was one of these things that it made me realize that, like, wow, trends really do sort of come back around, where it's like, you know, it had a lot of sort of ornate gilding and kind of like there's that old school clock that's right over the bar. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, you kind of put some skulls on this and it's like occult French. Like, this is actually super cool. But I loved it, man. The front door is really nice. Y'all put some really great touches on there to get that kind of, you know, like gothic sort of Adams Family but classy thing on there. It struck the right balance of like, it wasn't campy, which I appreciated, but there was definitely a sense of like, but you know, it's Halloween, it's fun. I got embarrassingly drunk because there's a lot of absinthe and champagne there.
That's right. I have 19 drinks on the menu, 10 of which involve absinthe and 9 of which involve champagne. Yeah, I think we tried to toe the line between character and caricature. You know, we wanted it to be, you know, Hollywood, but not Disney. And it's, I don't know, I encourage anyone who can get there to come check it out. It's a lot of fun.
It's a tough line to walk, too. It's sort of like that, like, sort of horror comedy movie genre, which I'm a huge fan of, where it's like, it can't be all, like, silly, right? It has to be, like, a little bit scary, and yours definitely has a sense of like, yeah, you know, it's Halloween, it's a party, it's fun. Like, let's not take ourselves like too like stone face seriously, but also, you know, there's that, what did you say it weighed like 1200 pounds? That sort of like, you know, fallen angel pit of hell, concrete sculpture that you have next to the bar. I was like, that was kind of badass.
Yeah. A big gargoyle. Her name's Linda.
Yeah. As it says in the book of the Necronomicon, Linda.
Means beautiful, lindo. As you mentioned, it's in the former Honeybee space, which had that flocked wallpaper, which definitely kind of matches. We didn't have to change the walls. Creaky wooden floor, you know, from the Old West kind of vibe that it had works for this vibe as well. So not a lot of hammer swinging, just a lot of decorating. And then the furniture is It's something else.
You just threw some eyeliner on it.
I don't know how to describe. Yeah, exactly. Eyeliner,
water black, from Hot Topic.
Black fingernail paint. The furniture is something else. It's all kind of modern Victorian leather, crazy high back chairs, and I don't know. It's great. I'm very pleased with the liftoff. So friends and family, you got to come too. Then we had the weekend, which was wildly successful and smooth. I can't tell you, this is the smoothest bar I've ever opened. And then we took Monday and Tuesday off, and we'll be back at it again tonight. So we'll be open Wednesday through Sunday at first. And then when we can really get our feet underneath us, we'll do 7 days a week.
And you're going to continue to run this through the rest of the year, correct?
I mean, this is our little magic trick that we do sometimes. Most notably, Amoria Margo opened as a pop-up. It was supposed to go for 6 months, and here we are literally over 10 years later. We've done this before where we call something a pop-up, but then we decide if it's successful or not enough to go on. We feel pretty confident that a champagne bar should be around until New Year's Eve. So we'll definitely go 3 months, and if it's doing well, we'll keep on going. But if not, we didn't do any sort of structural work up there. It's really just cosmetic. So we can easily kind of pull and you know, push some levers and change it again.
You've always been very
reckless.
Like, yeah, I wanted to say it, but I'm glad you did. But I mean, like with your spaces, you've always kind of like, you know, recreated, you know, something completely new, and the decor is always like pretty like extravagant. So I mean, it's fun to see that, you know, it's in a time where we often see bars and restaurants just closing and, you know, turning into Starbucks or whatever. Mm. Like, you guys always just kind of, we're like, oh, you know what? This concept's been fun for a while. Let's see what happens when we, you know, take away the puppy, as they say in Ghostbusters. But, right. You know, using a space and seeing, I always say that, you know, the space, the physical space in the bar is kind of like, that's kind of your, it's what will actually inspire the theme of a bar. You can't just force anything into a space. So it's cool to see how y'all have done that in many different ways.
Yeah. I got to give the credit to Robbie. He's the one who does all of the,
decor. He's the one who supplied all the black fingernail paint.
Well, yeah. I mean, don't forget if you know Robbie at all, or if you've ever just Googled him and looked at photos of him, he looks like a vampire. He lives that lifestyle. You know, he's got a crushed black velvet jacket and long white sleeves poking out of it and black fingernails and eyeliner and the whole bit, right? Some of the furniture that's in Café de l'Enfer is similar to some of the furniture that's in his home, right? So this is his, it's like those tiki guys who live the lifestyle. Like, this is his lifestyle. So this bar is kind of like him really getting to do the thing he's always kind of wanted to do. But he takes care of all the decor stuff. You know, I'm like Greg, we talk about it all the time. I'm colorblind. I don't really care about that kind of stuff. just like design and that's all your bag, Damon. I get it. But like, I'm just here for the drinks. I made the drinks. They're fucking delicious. Please come and check them out. And if you're into skulls and Bauhaus on the system, you know, we can crank it up and I don't know, get gothy.
Get gothy. I love it.
I love it. Well, hell.
Yeah, all about tequila and all about champagne and absinthe. But I do have a tequila drink on the menu.
I have a tequila drink in front of me right now.
I'm about to pour one. Let's talk about tequila, Greg. Who's in the studio with us?
Let's definitely talk about tequila. So we have Roberto Rosa from Maestro Dobel in with us today. Roberto, how are you, man? Thank you so much for jumping into our virtual studio.
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. So, talk to me a little bit about this really, really nice blue glass bottle that I have in front of me. And also, I got to say, I really love this little, what is this Copita dipped in that you sent me? This is wonderful. What is this thing?
I did not know what they sent me. Sorry. I have no visual, so I don't know what they sent you. I know you were getting a bottle, but I don't know what else they sent you.
Okay. Dang. I even thought about like when it came in the mail, be it like shooting an email back to the folks that sent it. I was just like, whoa, what is this? I've never seen a Copita like this. This is amazing. But I was like, no. I'm going to save this for the radio. So we get that like genuine moment of realization and you can hear it in my voice. So sorry to ambush you with all the questions.
I can jump in here. It's a dark copper glazed Copita. They're all hand formed. And what I like about it is that they don't have a flat bottom. They just kind of wiggle, like rock around, and it feels very natural. And they look really cool. And they're meant to.
See, now I feel left out. I didn't get one.
You didn't get
it. I didn't get one either. I didn't get one either, Roberto. So we're cool.
Right to your PR team, Roberto. I'm sure they'll send you one. let's back up a little bit, Roberto. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you, and how did you wind up in the studio with us today?
So I moved from Puerto Rico back in 2013 to New York. I had been bartending since 1998. After a few years, I've been with Maestro de Ball now for a little over 4 years. It's been a great job. So Maestro de Ball is a pretty amazing tequila, and it's a whole family of tequilas. They've been producing tequila for 11 generations.
11 generations. That's a lot.
Yeah. So the brand's pretty cool because while the owner wants to honor the family's tradition and keep the traditions alive, he's always looking to do new stuff, to create, be innovative and create newer techniques in the tequila producing. That's how the Cristalino tequila started coming out. Basically, right. Maestro de Bell did the first Cristalino tequila back in 2008. So,
right. And that's still a kind of a burgeoning category of tequila. Talk to our listeners a little bit about kind of what that process is.
I do apologize for the background. My dogs are playing with each other. That's not me squeaking in.
Brand representative and proud dog owner, Roberto Rosa, joins us on the Speakeasy.
I do apologize.
Matt, it's okay. It sounds like he's having an absolute ball back there.
Excuse me 1 second. Just let me tell them to stop.
The well, magic of live radio. You never know what's going to happen, right?
Stranger things have happened. while he's
sorry, they were about to get loud, so I had to like scream at them.
Cristalino is a category of, it's not an official category, but it's basically charcoal filtered añejo and an extra añejo tequila, correct?
So it can be a variety. It can be all. There's some tequilas out there that are just reposado and filtered. The set of rules is pretty loose. Basically, it's an aged tequila that goes through a filtering process right now because there's no established set of rules. Maestro de Bell Diamante is probably the first one. So it's a little different from the rest. It's reposado, blended with añejo and an extra añejo, and then it goes through the filtering process.
Interesting.
What's the benefit of making a Cristalino?
So you have the flavors and the smoothness of an aged spirit, but it's going to be lighter like a silver.
Yeah, so it lets a little bit more of like the fruity characteristic come back through because some of the kind of the oak.
It's not going to be all the oak flavor that you get. You get some of the oak flavor, but the agave still shines through. It's going to be light, bright spirit.
Well, I imagine that also does a lot for the sort of, you know, so much of what we drink and taste is dictated by perception, right? And what we expect. So I imagine that by sort of flipping the script on what people expect an aged tequila to look like versus what they expect a clear tequila to taste like, you can sort of almost get them mentally into sort of the penumbra between the two, where they have to actually kind of like take a step back and just think like, well, hold on here. What am I actually tasting? What is this? What are these notes? Rather than just kind of like, oh, this is an aged tequila, and kind of, you know, being like, yep, tastes like an aged tequila should.
Well, it's always fun as well because a lot of people get taken by surprise. They're usually when they don't like tequila, I give them a taste of the Diamante and they're like, wait, this is not what I expected like a silver tequila to taste like either. So because they think it's a silver when they first see it and thinking it's so it takes them by surprise as well because it's so much smoother than a silver tequila as well.
It's also funny how spirit trends work too, because for the longest time we were like, you know, everyone wanted something that was aged more. And, you know, then we also hit this point a few years ago where people were, I noticed a lot of consumers, they were really, and I think this probably had something to do with mezcal. But a lot of people started going back to like silver or Blanco tequilas because they're like, all right, I want to taste what this is actually like, you know, from the beginning. It's like, I know what an aged version of this is. Now let's go back to see. It's kind of like tasting a cash strength bourbon in a way, you know, it's like, this is what it came out of the barrel. Like it's kind of going back to the origin and seeing what happened there. So you're kind of doing both here, which is pretty cool.
Well, it also sort of reminds me of like the whole unaged whiskey thing, which for a while I like really sort of turned my nose up at, because I was just kind of like, well, this is like, you know, this just tells me like, hey, I'm a new distillery. I wanted to make a whiskey, but I didn't want to wait. So here you go. Right. But then I feel like a lot of people kind of jumped in and were like, okay, this is a, this category might've been created out of necessity, but then again, weren't all spirits at some point, but let's see if we can find a way to actually like work this and make it good and make it palatable. I remember in 2018, when I was running the bar program at the Jeffrey, there was this unaged whiskey that someone who had my job way before me had bought. And there was a case of it just like sitting in the basement. Mm-hmm. And I didn't touch it. I was just like, I didn't even give it the time of day. I was like, it's lazy whiskey. I'm not going to bother with that. And finally the GM was just like, dude, put this in a cocktail because I'm sick of looking at it. And I started messing around with it and I was like, oh, hey, this is actually pretty good. And I sort of put in like a modified white whiskey corpse survivor type of thing. A couple weeks later, I go to him. I'm like, hey, we need to order more of that. He's like, what? He's like, I thought we were trying to get rid of it. I was like, yeah, we got rid of it too effectively. It's gone and we need more now.
That's, well, Greg, that's just because you're, you know, such an amazing mixologist.
I know. And salesman.
Yeah. They should have promoted you to that guy's job.
But yeah, I mean, speaking of salesmanship, I did sort of have to ask, because I imagine, Roberto, there's a lot of kind of reframing that has to be done when you're selling something like this to the consumer. Like there's definitely probably a lot of re-education that you have to do. What is that kind of like on your end as a brand ambassador? What's your sort of tricks of the trade that you can use to get people back in that headspace of rethinking everything that they've been taught about how tequila is aged?
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple because, first of all, it tastes good. So that that makes the job a lot easier. it's usually my first thing is get them to try it. That makes my job so much easier. Once they try it, it's just explaining a little bit about the process and why we came up with it and things like that. But once they try it, that's the main part. I still haven't had somebody say like, oh, I don't like that. We officially became the PGA sponsor this year, and it brought a new crowd of tequila drinkers to Maestro de Bell. And yeah, everybody loved our cocktails. They loved the tequila by itself. So it's not difficult when you're selling something good.
Yeah. And it's like the whole liquid to lips idea, you know, you got to get the, product in their hands and in their face, as it were.
I think the hardest part is actually seeing it in behind the bars and getting some bartenders to realize that it's not a silver, it's not a plata, that it's actually like a whole new category of tequila.
Right.
Once you get that education part, then yeah, it's easy.
You have to educate the educators.
Yep.
I guess my question would be, while we're still talking about the Cristalino, you sort of started to talk about it there, but you stopped a little bit short. Like, what was the impetus? Why do this? Why create this whole new thing?
Same reason. In Mexico, a lot of people were looking towards lighter spirits. So usually the añejos and extra añejos were a little bit heavier. So people want to drink a lighter spirit. And that's where the owner got the idea. Try something new.
Yeah, sounds right to me.
Yeah. Well, speaking of trying something new, I want to try something new here because I feel like, speaking of your dogs, I feel like I'm a dog with a treat on its nose here, just staring at this bottle that I have in front of me that says Pechuga Tequila. Can you talk to me a little bit about First of all, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what Pechuga is, and then sort of what inspired you to make this bottle that I'm looking at right here?
So, as I explained, the owner is very into Mexican traditions. So he got the inspiration from mezcal in this case. The Pechuga is a traditional way to make mezcal. It's been around at least 100 years. I don't know who came up with it or the reason. It just works. It depends on the mezcal. It can be a second or third distillation where you macerate seasonal fruits and spices, and then you hang a source of protein inside the still, and you redistill the mezcal. I don't know why, but the vapors cooking while they cook the source of protein, it just creates a magical result. So the inspiration was basically that, but it's never been done before with tequila. And the owner decided to try it. I don't know how many tries it took to get this bottle out, but it's really nice. Pechuga, I don't know if you had the experience where somebody that's never had like a higher proof mezcal, a higher proof. Pechugas are usually higher proof and very funky. So it does turn some people off if they're not used to those flavors. This Pechuga is actually very approachable. You don't have to be like an agave geek to appreciate it. You don't have to try to understand it to appreciate it. It's a fun, great spirit to get around and enjoy. Basically, ours, it's our silver tequila. So it's distilled twice. We add a third distillation to our regular silver tequila where we macerate seasonal fruits. We use traditional fruits like tejocote, pineapple, apple, bananas. And we add seasonal Christmas spices to it. Yeah. And basically, we macerate for 3 weeks. And then we strain out the solids. And we redistill with turkey breast on top. So pavito means small turkey.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's basically a small turkey. It was the name of the bottling.
Yeah,
that's why you see those two turkeys up front and the bottle.
And I love turkeys. If anyone out there has ever been to Grand Army, you'll notice I collect ceramic turkeys. They're all over the place. but I've always loved the Pechuga category because it's been my understanding that essentially it's kind of like a harvest festival, kind of celebratory, like seasonal.
Yeah, so it's very seasonal. It's only for the Pechuga in mezcal culture, it's used only for like quinceañeras, weddings.
Right.
That's where you bring it out and drink it. So it's not an everyday drink, but with this, we're hoping to turn it into something where it doesn't have to be a big celebration. It's just to enjoy the small days, small victories throughout the days, things like that. It is a limited bottling right now. I think if I remember correctly, there's 12,600 bottles out there right now.
Cool.
I love
the turkey. Because to me, like, it couldn't have been released at a better time of year, right? Because we've got like Thanksgiving coming up next month, and you know, there's all the connections there. But I also like that. I'm sure that it's probably distilled out of it, but like the tryptophan. In turkey, I'm like,
you what?
The tryptophan, the chemical in turkey that makes you sleepy. I'm sure it doesn't exist in this bottle, but I just knowing that there's turkey involved with this calms me down, you know,
like yeah.
it really relaxes me.
Not sure if it's the tryptophan or the 40% ABV, but I feel real mellow after drinking this.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you guys tried it already? I've got a long nose on this.
Yeah, I've got a glass.
No,
I've got a glass in front of me.
Well, we're at about the halfway point here, so why don't we take a quick break and then come back and wait just a second longer to try this. We'll be right back with the Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
And we are back. You are listening to the Speakeasy here on Heritage Radio Network. Just as we were about to try some of this Pavito Cachuga tequila from Maestro Dobel here with Roberto Rosa. So I'm not going to wait any longer. I'm going to uncap this.
Oh, yeah.
And pour myself a little bit into this nice, what did you say it was? A bronze copita, Damon?
It's an aged copper. Sorry, I've got some in my mouth right now. I'm trying to talk. Yeah, I can read this for you. Maestro Dobel Pavito, or Turkey in Spanish, is a first-of-its-kind tequila using pechuga or turkey breast to both enhance and elevate the tequila. The result is a smooth yet complex tequila with layers of rich, savory notes. And then it also goes on to say about Harold Mendez for Maestro Dobel Pavito, this Copita set. There's 20 of these sets, by the way. I have number 7 of 20. Thank you.
Wow.
It says that they are fired for in a kiln for 12 hours, and they are inspired copper tones on the Maestro Dobel Pavito bottle. So basically, they're using this aged copper to make a glaze for these, and they have like kind of a almost like a sheen to them, like a like mother of pearl or like abalone in a way. It's like it's it, and they're kind of shaped like an oyster shell. They're kind of long, like a big egg, like half egg. So they're really cool. And they kind of like roll around on the surface of the bars. They're pretty fun, man.
Send me a cool photo. We'll put it up on the Speakeasy Instagram so people can see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, mine's in the glass. I haven't gotten it into my mouth yet. I'm just digging on the aroma first.
You know what I was saying? While we're talking about like the design of this, I know you guys are colorblind, but the bottle is blue. The bottle is blue. And, you know, from a design point of view, and I was making the joke about tryptophan, which is not in there, I'm pretty sure. But I was saying it kind of calms me down because it's very cooling. But the bottle being blue is also another thing in design where cool colors kind of like make you kind of slow down and relax, which is why like most grocery stores, their colors are like blues and greens and tans, you know, things that are calming, where like fast food restaurants are always yellow and red, like In-N-Out and McDonald's. So This just by looking at it makes me kind of relax.
Huh. You've mentioned that before. I think we had another blue bottle, maybe the Italicus or something.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which this would be great with.
My first nose on this thing is herby, but it's not the herbs that I typically expect. You know, I expect like cilantro, honestly, in tequila, but like I'm getting like mint.
So yeah, it does have some botanicals, mint. You're gonna get some more Christmas notes as you go through the tasting.
Yeah,
I feel a lot of sweet fruits up front as well.
I feel like just still on the nose here that you know maybe my nose is biased from the past, you know, several weeks and whatever leading up to opening an absinthe bar, but I'm also getting a lot of like anise.
Yeah,
but that's another one. That's a major one. When you taste it, that one's gonna pop a lot.
All right, I'm going in for. Anybody else have anything to say about aroma? I'm going in for a taste.
I mean, you're questioning your aromas from your your olfactory, but it couldn't have something to do with that wreck you got into yesterday on your scooter. did you fall on your face? What happened?
I was whipping on home from, you know, commuting home from work. I worked at Ateria last night, the tequila and mezcal bar. And yeah, my scooter failed. The handlebars simply folded like I was putting it away. And I was at almost top speed, so around 20 miles an hour. And I had to, I never hit the ground personally. I had to run it out. But I hyperflexed my knee and there's no chance I can go to work today. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to get back around tomorrow. I ordered a knee brace. It'll be here tomorrow. And then I got to maybe look into going to a doctor. I don't know. Well, I don't really like going to
doctors. Were you wearing a helmet?
I'm always wearing my helmet. Yes.
Okay, good. At least you got that.
Attaboy.
As I was going to say, you could probably use one of these little copitas, flip it over and protect your noggin.
Yeah, well, I say I always wear my helmet, but you know, when I was hit by a car on my bicycle several years ago, I had my helmet with me, but was not wearing it like an asshole. Anyway, so no automobiles involved in this fiasco. And luckily, again, late at night, there was no real traffic. If this had happened with traffic around, I could have careened into it. You know, who knows what would happen. Anyway, I feel lucky that I am only, I have a stiff knee, having trouble traversing the stairs in my apartment. But
You have some more of this and you'll...
Yeah, this will probably smooth some of it out.
Yeah, this is good for what it is. All that tryptophan that's in there, it'll mellow you out. I will say, tryptophan in the nice blue bottle.
I will say I'm going to give one more aroma note before I taste it. I'm getting a little bit of smoke here. I guess that's probably coming from the turkey.
The turkey, yes. That's correct.
Yeah, I was impressed by how much, I mean, usually with Pechuga, when I'm introducing people to it, like, you know, the sexy part of Pechuga is, you know, the fact that there's like a raw chicken breast or a turkey breast or like a goat shank or something hanging in the still that the vapors pass over. Iguana,
Iberico ham, you know, there's...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. What have you? Long pig. But yeah, like you give someone their first sip of it and they're expecting like, I don't know, like a chicken smoothie. And then, you know, obviously the first things you get are like the fruits and the spices. Like the chicken is kind of like a supporting player in the aroma. And they're always surprised. They're like, whoa, that's not super meaty. And you're like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there. The chicken is just the most surprising part. But the most surprising part of this is that I was actually, the first thing I got on the nose was like savory protein. I was like, oh, there's a strong, not quite like meaty note, but almost kind of like a mushroomy umami thing.
That's the way to go.
Yeah, it's super well balanced. When you start tasting it, as it hits different parts of your tongue, you'll see the transition between the like sweet, savory. It finishes out savory, so it balances out in the end really well.
Yeah, I just took my first little sip and overwhelmingly cooked agave, right? Big, it's like when you go visit a tequila and they give you pieces of agave to kind of chew on. That's what I'm getting right away. Lots of that. And then just a ton of that Christmassy baking spice situation. And then it's nice and warm. Feels very warming. Obviously those are kind of warming spices, I guess, but
like the apple kind of starts coming through too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some banana, I get it as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, it finishes plantain, which surprised and delighted me because I love plantains.
You know what's cool about this? It's also making me rethink like my holiday dinners. Like if I'm going to cook a turkey, you know, like instead of doing it in the traditional like kind of fixings, like maybe consider using mint and apple and pineapple and plantain and... It's kind of got me thinking about that, and it's making me think on the culinary side.
Sure, maybe like some mofongo or something.
Yeah.
Don't talk about mofongo, please. I miss mofongo so bad. I'm Puerto Rican, remember.
That's right.
I haven't found one that I enjoyed yet in the city, so.
Well, PR is only a quick 4-hour flight away. You can jump down. Well, when we travel again, I guess.
Yeah.
So then... It's a little bit peppery as it lingers, you know, again, baking spices coming through like nutmeg and cinnamon. It's quite good. You mentioned a fruit that I don't know. Tejocote. Tejocote. That's what you said. Yeah.
So I've actually never had the fruit per se either. I've seen it in photos, but I haven't tried it. It's very traditional. I was researching it because I wanted to learn more about it. And apparently it used to be like the most smuggled fruit into the U.S. a few years back. Now it's actually legal to bring up, but it's something very traditional during the Christmas season in Mexico. So it goes into a lot of dishes. It goes into drinks. They use it a lot during this season.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking it up right now. They look like sort of tiny persimmons. I wonder if they have any flavor similarities.
I definitely do get a little bit of that kind of persimmon-like zip off of this.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely would scan if our highly unscientific assessment of this particular species is on point.
Well, I'm going to have my second Gopita just so I can...
Yeah, yeah. First one's just to cleanse the palate, buddy. I know how it goes. I'm going in for my second one as well.
What's the third one for?
Fun.
Yeah. Anything.
So I'm on my third one.
Anything.
That's also what the fourth, fifth, and et cetera are for, too.
Yeah, anything past two is fun. Wow. On second approach, it's very, I don't know, apricot. I'm getting a lot of apricot.
Well, I have it really sneakily. I'm in the podcasting studio that I've created out of a ancillary closet in my apartment, which like I'm having to kind of mute myself, open the door, smell it, and come back in because the first sniff that I tried to do just in here in this little like, you know, 4 foot by 5 foot space, I'm like, the only thing I smell is
shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, Greg. What are we gonna do with you, Greg?
Well, you know, the funny thing, okay, besides Greg's studio, the funny thing about this is that, you know, it's, I don't know if it's just the power of influence. You are a very influential person, Sutter, but yeah, I am, my second one, I am getting like apricot eau de vie, not like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Like a mark.
Yeah. So this it's kind of taken.
So I do believe that's the tejocote because. Someone described it like a sour apricot kind of fruit to me. So
yeah,
that might be it.
Well, this is definitely taking me on a trip for sure. I mean, I get something different every time I take a sip and I wasn't really sure what to expect when we first got these bottles, but this is really cool. I can't wait to show my friends, my three friends that I can see during this time.
Right.
Also, something really cool about it, the price point is definitely not as a Pechuga Mezcal price point. It's much lower. Cool. The bottle is around $60.
Wow. Nice. Yeah,
that's definitely approachable, especially for something that's sort of celebratory and seasonal. You mentioned that this is a relatively limited release. Do you imagine that Dobel will continue to produce this and make it kind of all available all the time, or is it always going to be a limited release?
I hope they keep doing it every year. I don't know if it's going to be something that's around year round, but if they bring it out every year towards this season, I'm definitely buying a bottle.
Yeah, they make you buy it? Cool.
Yeah, just say we'll fake another radio show for you if you want it. Just like hoard it. It's like, oh yeah, man. Then there was this other show that I had to be on. Just send them all to me. I'll make sure they get the bottles.
Yeah, there you go. That's what Greg does.
Do the Greg Benson rotation and get on all of his shows.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Souther? I mean, like you're the guy who's been a chef before and taught culinary school. I mean, like there's just a lot going on here, right?
Absolutely. It's quite surprising. Again, it's what Greg was talking about earlier. It kind of tricks the mind. You just think, okay, I'm pouring myself some tequila that looks like a silver. And but then suddenly it's a wide open world of aromas. And, you know, I say it 1,000 times, aroma is 90% of flavor. So all those aromas are coming together to make these really interesting and unique flavors. I've had plenty of pechugas before, many with you, Damon. We've had all variety of different proteins and even some different fruits and vegetables in pechuga, right? That they're sort of widening the nomenclature. You know, I've had the pechuga that has corn in it, and I've had the pechuga that has just lots of pineapple. And so it adds a layer to your drinking. Suddenly it's almost like I don't want to go too far with my analogy here, but it's almost like this is a cocktail, right?
I was thinking
that's exactly how to describe it. It's a cocktail by the master distiller.
Right. It's sort of the macro cocktail, right? And can you make cocktails with it? Of course, right? Making cocktails with cocktails. That's like half my job, I feel like. But yeah, this has so much going, so much character of its own. I would just drink this. I don't know. I kind of do this anyway, at least with like the first half of a bottle of anything new I get a hold of. I just drink it just to see what it's about. But this seems to me like something I would just kind of drink always. Just pour it in a glass or maybe over ice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's something really interesting about this that kind of takes me back to a few episodes ago when we were talking about shochu. You know, it's like, it's something that like, I don't really want to stack anything else on. We can't help it. That's what we do. We're cocktail guys. You know, that's as soon as we get something, we start thinking about, I mean, sure. Like you said, you taste it on its own for a little while. But the whole time you're thinking about how I'm going to use this in a cocktail.
Right. Right. That's why I'm tasting it on its own, because I'm trying to consider where I would use it. Right.
Right.
Got to get to know it on its own before I can consider using it in something else.
Yeah, but with this, just like this needs to exist on its own. I mean, for the listeners out there, if you want to mix up a cocktail with it, go right ahead. Let us know what you made. Send us a message, and we'd love to hear about it. But man, this is really cool on its own. I don't think I'm not going to mix it with anything. I'm going to try and save this until Thanksgiving so I can pour it for my friends and family. But definitely not going to mix it.
This bottle is not going to make it to Thanksgiving.
I know, I was gonna say, I like how David said he's gonna try to. Can't make any promises though.
Well, this is cool. I mean, like, honestly, we haven't had a show like this. We haven't had an episode like this in a while, to where it's like, I feel like we've all kind of like we've all kind of at certain points in this conversation had kind of a loss for words for like what this is, what we're actually experiencing.
I agree. I'm a little bit stumped by this one. Yeah. And that is fun. It's challenging.
Yeah.
I've already poured myself. I'm on my third. So now I'm into the fun zone.
It sort of seems, sorry, go ahead, Sather.
I was just going to say you're right, Damon. We're in sort of beginner mind on this one. It's a very new learning curve. So, Roberto.
Yeah.
You guys are making this Pechuga tequila. You were the first to do Cristalino. You're the first to do this. Many followed and did other Cristalinos. Has anyone already followed, or do you know of anybody out there who's planning to do a Pechuga tequila?
Not that I know of. Not so, but yeah. No.
Well,
let's see the results of this.
Yeah, wait till the show gets out there. because I think it's going to be something that people glom onto. I think that other tequila makers out there will get into this practice, because it's definitely an addition, not a subtraction. There's some things that are happening here that are unique and cool and interesting and worth pursuing.
Yeah, it's what I like about it. It's what you guys were describing. With every sip, you get something different. You get a new flavor added in there. You find something new in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also to kind of like echo on what Sather just said, I don't think, Maestro Tobel is relatively small compared to a lot of the other tequila houses, right? And I think making something as like micro as this run, especially with a Pechuga where there's like some real kind of like voodoo witchcraft kind of something that happens with a Pechuga. You know, you're putting like a chicken breast or a turkey breast in a still. You fire up the still, and then there's like nothing left in the still. You wouldn't you open the hatch. It's like some really crazy, crazy stuff. So like, I think this is like too avant-garde and too like kind of curveball-y for a lot of the bigger houses to do. So
right, I think that some smaller houses will get on board and try and do limited release, holiday time. You know, again, Pechuga in the mezcal world is all about celebration. You know, you don't just drink it on an average day. You save it for the big days, like you mentioned earlier, parties, quinceañeras, weddings, even funerals. It's held in high regard because of its sort of scarcity. You know, it's one off a year that the maker will do a Pechuga.
Man, I'm kind of blown away today. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah,
And that's sort of the point, right, Roberto? I mean, it seems like the point of what y'all are doing over there is to, you know, do exactly what you did to us. It's just kind of render us speechless to be like, wow, I don't, there's a lot of new stuff here that, you know, it's easy for us being in the business for as long as we have to get kind of jaded and cynical. And even if we don't like think it out loud, we still in the back of our minds are like, yeah, I've kind of seen it all, you know, but like, this is new and novel. And I feel like kind of that's the objective of what y'all were trying to do with this is make something that makes people kind of shut up and go, whoa, this is different.
Well, it did the same to me. I work for a company and it did the same to me. I mean, I have a couple different bottles of Pechuga here in my house of Mezcal. I have the Jamón Ibérico. I had one with Azotolu with like a rattlesnake poison in there.
Yeah,
there's plenty out there, very different. And as I was reading through the selling materials that they sent me before the sample, I'm like, okay, this seems very cool. It's got to be very interesting. But once I tasted it, I'm like, wait, this is way better than anything I had imagined in my head that it was going to taste like. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was something that even I was pleasantly surprised with how good it is.
It's nice to be surprised like that sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. It's also, Greg, you know, the thing about this to me that what I think has been kind of throwing me off a little bit in a really great way is that, and Roberto, you mentioned this too, like, you know, typically whenever you're, I mean, not typically, like always, whenever you have a Pechuga, it's Mezcal until now. But with Mezcal, you know, it's much more like, you know, it's bigger, bolder, grassier, sometimes smokier flavors. And with this, it's very flavorful, but it's also delicate at the same time. So like you are able to like tap into all those flavors and aromas that would otherwise sometimes be overpowered by the Mezcal background. So that's what's...
Yeah, you're not having to search them. You're not having to search out these flavors past the smoke and the ABV. Yeah, these flavors are pretty front and center and right there. I also just think it's like, I feel it's one of those, you know, the chip clip, that thing that you clip on your potato chip bag that you purchase, even though long before that you were using a clothespin and you're like, how come I didn't invent this? You know what I mean? It seems like a situation where tequila and mezcal are so intrinsically linked and no one ever until now thought to do a tequila Pechuga. Like, How did it slip by everybody?
Right, right.
You know?
That's some real oversight.
Such an obvious, oh yeah, put a clip on the bag. Oh, great.
Well, Roberto, before we go, I have one question. And I'm aware that the answer to this question is a Google away, but I'm going to do this the old-fashioned way and ask you. Because a lot of times when I'm, you know, talking to people about Pechuga who aren't familiar with that category, the question they always ask is, so do you eat the turkey afterwards? And the honest answer is, I don't know. And again, this has been going on for years. At any point in there, I could have Googled it, but I didn't because, you know, I'm lazy. So I'm asking you, what happens with the turkey or chicken or ham in Barrico that gets hung over the still? What happens to it afterwards?
So I've heard that at our distillery, it is eaten by the employees.
Nice.
Excellent.
That's what I've heard. I haven't seen them eat it, but that's what I've heard.
God, I would. That must be. I mean, geez, if you think the tryptophan in this bottle is going to put you to sleep, imagine like just chowing down on some Imbarico ham with like 40% ABV and vapors just baked into it.
Way better than a Jello shot, guys. So, but I've also heard, I mean, like I've heard from, depending on what kind of protein you put in there, and I've heard sometimes that, like, depending on the heat from the still, like, sometimes you open up the still and there's not even anything left.
Yeah, it's kind of just gone.
Yeah. So it's just kind of crazy. It's a crazy thing. It's like a voodoo witchcraft thing. Like I said, you know, it's like, however this came about, it's just, I don't know. I'm just glad. I'm glad it exists.
I'm glad it exists in front of me right now.
I'm glad we all exist, even after my accident last night. I'm glad I exist still.
For sure.
We all are
unkillable, still unkillable. Well, Roberto, man, really great to catch up with you and talk to you about these innovations that are going on over at Maestro Dobel and the Pavito Little Turkey Silver Tequila with natural flavors. Where can people follow along and understand what's going on with the company and with you?
So the Instagram, it's pretty pretty on the forefront. Like, it's always showing what's coming new, what we're doing with the events and things like that. So the U.S. Instagram account is at Dobel Tequila.
Pretty easy. Dobel Tequila on Instagram. That's an easy one.
Great.
Cool.
Well, hey, Roberto, man, this has been awesome. I mean, I can certainly attest, and I would like to make sure that we say this again. Like, it's not often that someone comes on the show with a product that just kind of like shuts us the fuck up. Like, all we do is talk. There's three of us that talk a lot, and you just kind of floored us here today with this. I mean, and we're not being paid by you to like say that. We're just like, this truly is, it's an amazing product, and what a cool innovation for you to be able to enjoy. And it must be really exciting for you to represent, you know, not only a company that created Cristalino, but then the first, you know, Pechuga tequila. It's really cool. So thanks for being on the show today. And thanks for sending the sample so we could try this with you. And man, for y'all out there, I find a bottle of Pavito. This is truly a unique spirit. I'm kind of shocked right now.
This is going to be a unique thing for you to bring to your holiday table this season. This is going to be a unique thing to gift to your friends who are into tequila and mezcal. Or maybe they're into tequila and they're dipping their toes into mezcal. This would be a good bridge. I don't know. Damon's right. You've sort of stumped the monkeys today.
That's pretty good. That's usually the reception that it's gotten so far. I was recently in an agave event here in New York, and I snuck a bottle in so I could give taste to like knowledgeable people that I know within the industry. And everybody was like, "Can I buy the bottle off you right now?" Like, so, yeah, it's been good, very well received.
Right. You know, I guess I just thought of one other thing too. It's like, I like that it's the only one that exists. There's like no basis of comparison.
Right.
Today, what we've done is we've tasted this and observed it as just a spirit that was put in front of us with no comparison. Right. And we all agree that this is just an outstanding spirit. Who cares about, like, you know, I mean, obviously we do care, but like, you know, the category aside, and this being the only one, it's just a great spirit.
Yeah.
That's what it is, you know? So kudos to you guys, for making something so cool. And you're right, Greg. This is probably not going to last until Thanksgiving after all this.
But I'm wondering if it's going to last through the weekend at this point. It's a holiday weekend, too. My God. Yeah, no. Low hopes for that.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks again, Roberto, for being on the show today. Everyone check out Maestro Dobel Tequila. The Pavito is killer. It's going to be something that everyone should try at least once, right? But you should try it three times because you get something different every time. But check them out and check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station to keep us going. And until next time, everyone, cheers.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Salud.
Salud.
So you don't shun the devil with your...
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.